Welcome to the year-end edition of the Story Mine. Now it's time to bring on the new year with renewed energy. It's funny, but I can't think of a better way to bring on the new year than to talk about one of the great storytellers from over 100 years ago who seemed to have an incredible sense of the way things were in those days of the mid to latter 1800s.
I know who you're talking about, Dave. He's one of my favorite storytellers from the times of the Old West, yet he was born in 1835. His name was Samuel Clemens. To some people, that name might not be recognizable because he was better known as his pen name, Mark Twain. Samuel Clemens always wanted to be a riverboat captain, and he eventually became one. But like many of us do, he lost his job. Because he was a writer and he worked with newspapers, he took upon the moniker of Mark Twain, which interpreted into riverboat jargon means 2 fathoms deep. I love story. Shoot, how else can we learn something that we might not have ever known? Mark Twain, 2 fathoms? One of my favorite quotes from Mark Twain is, "We are always too busy for our children. We never give them the time or interest they deserve. We lavish gifts upon them, but the most precious gift, our personal association, which means so much to them, we give grudgingly."
I remember telling myself in 4th grade that I'd never be a writer because I didn't know how to spell. Well, thank goodness for personal computers and spell check. Mark Twain put it this way, which might have been my best excuse. He said, "Anyone who can only think of one way to spell a word obviously lacks imagination." Here's one that I should have given heed to and probably still need to. "It is best to keep your mouth shut and be presumed ignorant than to open it and remove all doubt." It's hopeless for me, isn't it, Kathy?
Dave, you're not hopeless. You're helpless. You know I find much wisdom in Mark Twain's quotes and hear them quite often. One that I heard recently was, "The only way to keep your health is to eat what you don't want, drink what you don't like, and do what you'd rather not." That one for sure will be my ticket to old age. Oh, and one more that I like less as I've gotten older. "If God had meant for us to be naked, we'd have been born that way." Dave, I heard you perform one of Mark Twain's great stories many years ago, and I was immediately enamored with the famous writer because he has a talent to capture a sense of the gold country along Highway 49 in California.
Oh my gosh, Kathy, I know which one you're talking about. And I haven't told that story in at least 10 years. I'll have to admit it's one of the most difficult to do because of the different characters, but it's also one of my very favorite of Mark Twain's works. You know, he's best known as the author of Tom Sawyer with Huckleberry Finn. But because I'm a retired miner, I'm drawn to the famous work he titled The Celebrated Jumping Frog of Calaveras County. Perhaps we could get Mark Twain himself to tell us the story. In compliance with the request of a friend of mine who wrote me from the East, I called on good-natured, garrulous old Simon Wheeler and inquired after my friend's friend Leonidas W. Smiley, as requested to do, and hereunto append the result. I have a lurking suspicion that Leonidas W. Smiley is a myth, that my friend never knew such a personage, and that he only conjectured that if I ask old Wheeler about him, it would remind him of his infamous Jim Smiley, and he would go on to work and bore me nearly to death with some infernal reminiscence of him as long and tedious as it should be useless to me. If that was the design, it certainly succeeded. I found Simon Wheeler dozing comfortably by the barroom stove of the old dilapidated tavern in the ancient mining camp of Angels, and I noticed that he was fat and bald-headed and had an expression of winning gentleness and simplicity upon his tranquil countenance. He roused up and gave me good day. I told him a friend of mine had commissioned me to make some inquiries about a cherished companion of his boyhood named Leonidas W. Smiley, Reverend Leonidas W. Smiley, a young minister of the gospel who, he had heard, was at one time a resident of Angels Camp. I added that if Mr. Wheeler could tell me anything about this Reverend Leonidas W. Smiley, I would feel under many obligations to him. Simon Wheeler backed me into a corner and blockaded me there with his chair, and then sat me down and reeled off a monotonous narrative. He never smiled, he never frowned, he never changed his voice from the gentle flowing key to which he tuned the initial sentence. He never betrayed the slightest suspicion of enthusiasm, but all through the interminable narrative there ran a vein of impressive earnestness and sincerity which showed me plainly that so far from his imagining that there was anything ridiculous or funny about his story, he regarded it as a really important matter and admired its two heroes as men of transcendent genius and finesse. To me, the spectacle of a man drifting serenely along through such a queer yarn without ever smiling was exquisitely absurd. As I said before, I asked him to tell me what he knew of Reverend Leonidas W. Smiley, and he replied as follows. I let him go on in his own way and never interrupted him once. There was a feller here once by the name of Jim Smiley in the winter of 49, or maybe it was a spring of 50. I don't recollect exactly somehow, though what makes me think it was one or t'other is because I remember the big flume wasn't finished when he first came to the camp. But anyway, he was the curiousest man about always betting on anything that turned up you ever see. If he could get anybody to bet on the other side. And if he couldn't, he'd change sides. Anyway, that suited the other man, would suit him anyway, just so's he'd get a bet. He was satisfied. But still he was lucky. Uncommon lucky. He most always come out winner. He was always ready and laying for a chance, and there couldn't be no sultry thing mentioned, but that feller'd offer to bet on it, and take any side you please, as I was just telling you. If there was a horse race, you'd find him flush or you'd find him busted at the end of it. If there was a dog fight, he'd bet on it. If there was a cat fight, he'd bet on it. If there was a chicken fight, he'd bet on it. Why, if there was two birds setting on a fence, he would bet you which one would fly first, or if there was a camp meeting, he would be there regular to bet on Parson Walker, which he judged to be the best exhorter about here, and so he was, too, and a good man. If he ever seen a straddlebug start to go anywhere, he would bet you how long it would take him to get wherever he was going to, and if you took him up, he'd follow that straddlebug to Mexico, but what he would find out where he was bound for and how long he was on the road. Lots of the boys here have seen that Smiley and can tell you about him. Why, it never made no difference to him. He'd bet on anything, the dangdest feller. Parson Walker's wife laid very sick once and for a good long while, and it seemed as if they weren't going to save her. But one morning he come in and Smiley asked how she was, and he said she was considerably better, thank the Lord for his infinite mercy, and coming on so smart that with the blessings of Providence she'd get well yet. And Smiley, before he thought, says,
"Well, I'll risk 2.5 that she don't anyway."
This here Smiley had a mare. The boys called her the 15-minute nag, but that was only in fun, you know, because, of course, she was faster than that, and he used to win money on that horse. For all, she was so slow and always had the asthma or the distemper or the consumption or something of that kind. They used to give her 200 or 300 yards start and then pass her underway. But always at the fag end of the race, she'd get excited and desperate-like and come cavorting and straddling up and scattering her legs around limber, sometimes in the air and sometimes out to one side amongst the fence, and kicking up more dust and raising more racket with her coughing and sneezing and blowing her nose, and always fetch up at their stand just about a neck ahead, as you near could cipher it down. And he had a little small bull pup, too, that to look at him, you'd think he wasn't worth a cent.
but to sit around and look ornery and lay for a chance to steal something. But as soon as money was up on him, he was a different dog. His underjaw began to stick out like the forecastle of a steamboat, and his teeth would uncover and shine savage like the furnaces. And the dog might tackle him and bully rag him and bite him and throw him over his shoulder two or three times. And Andrew Jackson, which was the name of the pup, Andrew Jackson had never led on but what he was satisfied and hadn't expected nothing else, and the bets being doubled and doubled on the other side all the time till the money was all up, and then all of a sudden he'd grab that other dog just by the gent of the hind leg and freeze on it, not chew, you understand, but only just grip and hang on till they thronged up the sponge, if it was a year. Smiley always come out winner on that pup till he harnessed a dog once that didn't have no hind legs, because they'd been sawed off by a circular saw. And when the thing had gone along far enough and the money was all up and he come to make a snatch for his pet bolt, he saw in a minute how he'd been imposed on and how the other dog had had him in the door, so to speak, and he peered surprised. And then he looked sorter discouraged-like and didn't try no more to win the fight, and so he got shucked out bad. He give Smiley a look as much as to say his heart was broke, and it was his fault for putting up a dog that hadn't no hind legs for him to take both of, which was his main dependence in a fight. And then he limped off a piece and laid down and died. It was a good pup, was that Andrew Jackson, and would have made a name for himself if he'd lived, for the stuff was in him, and he had genius, I know it, because he hadn't had no opportunities to speak of, and it don't stand to reason that a dog could make such a fight as he could under them circumstances if he hadn't no talent. It always makes me feel sorry when I think of that last fight of his'n and the way that it turned out. Well, this here Smiley had rat terriers and chicken cocks and tomcats and all of them kinds of things till you couldn't rest and you couldn't fetch nothing for him to bet on, but he'd match you. He catched a frog one day and took him home and said he calculated to educate him. And so he never done nothing for 3 months but set in his backyard and learn that frog to jump. And you bet you he did learn him, too. He give him a little punch behind, and the next minute you'd see that frog whirling in the air like a doughnut. See him turn one somerset, or maybe a couple, if he got a good start, and come down flat-footed and all right like a cat. He got him up so in the matter of cats and flies, and kept him in practice so constant that he'd nail a fly every time as far as he could see him. Smiley said all a frog wanted was education, and he could do most anything, and I believed him. Why, I seen him set Dan'l Webster down here on this floor. Dan'l Webster was the name of the frog. And he'd sing out,
"Flies, Daniel, flies!"
And quicker than you could wink, he'd spring straight up and snake a fly off on the counter there and flop down on the floor again as solid as a gob of mud and fall to scratching the side of his head with his hind foot as indifferent as if he hadn't no idea he'd been doing any more than any frog might do. You never see a frog so modest and straightforward as he was, for all he was so gifted. And when it come to fair and square jumping on a dead level, he could get over more ground at one straddle than any animal of his breed you ever see. Jumping on a dead level was his strong suit, you understand. And when it come to that, Smiley would ante up money on him as long as he had a red. Smiley was monstrous proud of his frog, and well he might be for fellers that had traveled and been everywheres. All said that he laid over any frog that ever they did see. Well, Smiley kept the beast in a little lattice box, and he used to fetch him downtown sometimes and lay for a bet. And one day a feller, a stranger in the camp, he was come across him with his box and says, What might that be you got there in that box? And Smiley says, sorter indifferent-like,
it might be a parrot, or it might be a canary, maybe, but it ain't. It's only a frog.
And the feller took it and looked at it careful and turned it round this way and that and says, so 'tis. Well, what's he good for? Well, Smiley says, easy and careless.
He's good enough for one thing, I should judge. He can outjump any frog in Calaveras County.
The feller took the box again and took another long particular look and give it back to Smiley and said very deliberate, well, I don't see no points about that frog that's any better than any other frog.
Well, maybe you don't,
Smiley says.
Maybe you understand frogs and maybe you don't understand them. Maybe you've had experience and maybe you ain't only an amateur as it were. Anyways, I got my opinion and I'll risk $40 that he can outjump any frog in Calaveras County.
And the feller studied a minute and then says kinder sad-like, well, I'm only a stranger here and I ain't got no frog, but if I had a frog, I'd bet you.
That's all right, that's all right. If you'll hold my box a minute, I'll go and get you a frog.
And so the feller took the box and put up his $40 along with Smiley's and then sat down to wait. So he sat there a good while thinking and thinking to himself, and then he got the frog out and prized his mouth open and took a teaspoon and filled him full of quail shot, filled him pretty near up to his chin, and set him down on the floor. Smiley, he went to the swamp and slopped around in the mud for a long time, and finally he catched the frog and fetched him in and give him to this feller and says,
now, if you're ready, set him alongside of Daniel with his forepaws just even with Daniel, and I'll give the word.
Then he says,
1, 2, 3, jump!
And him and that feller touched up the frogs from behind, and the new frog hopped off. But Daniel's give a heave and hoisted up his shoulders, so like a Frenchman. But it wasn't no use. He couldn't budge. He was planted as solid as an anvil, and he couldn't no more stir than if he was anchored out. Smiley was a good deal surprised, and he was disgusted, too. But he didn't have no idea what the matter was, of course. The feller took the money and started away, and when he was going out the door, he sorter jerked his thumb over his shoulder this way at Dan'l and says again, very deliberate, well, I don't see no points about that frog that's any better than any other frog. Smiley, he stood scratching his head and looking down at Dan'l a long time, and at last he says,
I do wonder what in the nation that frog throwed off for. I wonder if there ain't something the matter with him, as he appears to look mighty baggy somehow.
And he catched Dan'l by the nape of the neck and lifted him up and says,
well, blame my cats if he don't weigh 5 pounds.
And turned him upside down, and he belched out a double handful of shot. And then he see how it was, and he was the maddest man. He set the frog down and took out after that feller, but he never catched him. And
here's where Simon Wheeler heard his name called from the front yard and got up to see what was wanted. And turned to me as he moved away, he said,
just sit there where you are, stranger, and rest easy. I ain't going to be gone a second.
But by your leave, I did not think that a continuation of the history of the enterprising vagabond Jim Smiley would be likely to afford me much information concerning the Reverend Leonidas W. Smiley, and so I started away. At the door, I met the sociable Wheeler returning, and he buttonholed me and recommenced,
Well, this here Smiley had a yeller one-eyed cow that didn't have no tail, only just a short stump like a banana. Oh, hang Smiley and his afflicted cow, I muttered good-naturedly, and bidding the old gentleman good day, I departed.
Dave, was that really Mark Twain that just told that story?
His very words.
What a way to ring out the old year. Old stories told in new times.
This has been an exciting year for Kathy and I. We've wanted to have a story program for quite a while because we've found that when you share stories and when people share their stories, they find common interests. Why, just a few evenings ago, Kathy and I stopped in at a local eatery to have a gyro, and Kathy made a comment to this gal who was leaving about being sure she drives carefully in that snow. And because of that comment, we were all of a sudden drawn into further conversation and story sharing that lasted for well over an hour. We've just met a new friend. We had such a good time with her.
We did. And that's what story is all about. Everyone has a story to share. If you would like to share one of your stories, contact us at thestorymine@gmail.com. The Crescent Superband will close out our program with Auld Lang Syne.
Have a happy new year!